Welcome to EMG Transformations with Dan Stoll. Each episode will empower you to ignite your inner fire and provide methods to maximize your mental and physical performance. You never know how one valuable insight can make such a big impact. Please leave a 5-star review if this episode leaves a positive impact on you. And don't be shy to screenshot and share episodes on social media that you find helpful so we can spread the message and make the world a better place. You never know who may need to hear and the impact it has on them too. We're only scratching the surface. There's so much more to learn. Subscribe and stick around to manage stress, improve your health, and create lasting lifestyle changes. Buckle up and get ready to spark your transformation with Nova Fusion.
3, 2, 1, 0. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Welcome to EMG Transformations. I'm energized to feature Coach Kip Ione. Kip invested 25 years at the NCAA Division III men's basketball level. 4 years as a player, 7 years as an assistant, and 14 as a head coach. 3 years into his head coaching run, a set of traumatic events caused him to reassess and reshape his approach to coaching, giving birth to what is today both the Teams of Men coaching framework and business. Kip is the founder and lead facilitator for Teams of Men and the author of Mirror Training. His core philosophy is to empower coaches to enlighten their male athletes to the potential of reimagined manhood. Coach Ione believes men versed in emotional fluency, healthy relationship skills, and curiosity will be the best able to show up as quality husbands, fathers, and members of society. Today, he is the head coach of the South Salem High School Boys Basketball Program, with the mission to impact another generation of young men. Thank you so much for joining us today, Coach.
Thank you, sir. And I gotta book you going forward, Dan, for all my intros. I'm just going to copy and paste that and let you just be the front. That was perfect. Thank you so much for the summary, because I think it was really accurate, and I appreciate that. And hopefully the audience resonates with all the bullet points you laid out.
Yeah, I got you, man. And like I said, I'm really excited to dive into this conversation because not only are you a coach, but you're really speaking up and bringing some awareness of some really important matters that, you know, I think need to be have more conversations about and just more discussion. So I really respect the work that you're doing, not only with developing these young men, but as a bigger role in society and the impact that you're creating. So I am grateful to have
you
on and looking forward to this conversation.
Oh, yes. And I think, you know, you mentioned to me before the EMG formula and I hope to fit those the different letters, and excited to talk about the ways we do.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's dive into that EMG formula then and kick things off. I love to start with the backstories here. And, you know, specifically for you, you know, why did you decide to become a basketball coach in the first place? I'm curious,
yeah.
You know, is that something that you've always wanted to do, or did something happen that pulled you in that direction?
Well, you know, I can remember the exact moment the bug kind of hit me, which is crazy because it wasn't until I was in college as a college basketball player, because my dad is a 40-year college and high school coach, PE teacher, educator. He coached everything from both boys and girls basketball to track and field to golf. Like, education and sports have always been intertwined in our family. But I can vividly remember, like, I was getting interviewed as a high school athlete, like, you anticipate Kip following in your dad's footsteps, and being shallow and not really knowing much. I was like, nah, coaches don't get paid enough. Obviously in 1996, that was a different thing, right, than what we have today, where coaches make a hell of a lot more. But really the moment came when I was coaching. I only signed up to coach the college basketball camp where I was playing at Willamette University because my wife was a basketball player on the women's team and she was working the same week. So I only signed up to do that because she said, I'm working camp. Why aren't you working camp? So I did it. I had never coached before, but I remember, I think I had 11-year-olds, maybe 10-year-olds in that first group. and it might have been 2 days into camp, and we ran something right. Like, we executed the play, and not just that feeling, but the joy on their faces when we actually made the layup as well. I remember it really was like an aha, hit me, light bulb moment. Like, this is cool. Like, I really enjoy trying to solve this for them, trying to help them find this answer that just happened. So that was probably the moment where I recognized, like, I do enjoy this. And then after I got done as a senior, I was lifting weights because I already knew I was going to the Masters of Arts and Teaching program, MAT program, to be a teacher at the school as a grad student. And my head coach, Gordy James, came in and said, "Hey, you're already going there. Why don't you just join the staff?" And I was like, why not? You know, I'm 21, 22. My wife and I kind of had a plan to be teachers, what we're going to do with it. And that just was the natural, like, onboarding and beginning of everything. So that's kind of my origin story into having a clipboard and a whistle for almost all of my adult life.
Yeah. You know, some of these experiences, we don't typically see them coming, but, you know, they can be the greatest blessing that just keeps on giving. And it almost feels like this is a life calling for you as well.
Absolutely. And I think even then, like, even in sharing with you my origin story, my hesitation to it was probably rooted in a lot of the man box stuff I want to get people free of. Because even my hesitation was, well, I don't know if I could achieve this status that I'm looking for. But then in that moment, I recognized it wasn't status I wanted. I wanted fulfillment, right? I wanted to be able to serve and help others. And I got that in the smiles and the happiness of those 10 and 11 year olds, right? Which was definitely not something that I was thinking about when I was 17 or when I was 14 or even when I was an active college athlete. But, you know, with the power of reflection and the power of curiosity, I can see kind of that trigger moment in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting how we can go into coaching with one of two directions, where one of us wants to, the ego comes into play, where we want to be this great coach. We want this recognition. But then other side, on the empathy side, you know, you have this coach that really wants to develop their players and see the growth in them. And it doesn't necessarily matter about the wins and the losses, but if you can see that progress, you see that personal growth on and off the court, you know, that's what that fulfillment, like you just mentioned. And, you know, I've been blessed to start working with some fifth and sixth grade girls, and I'm starting to see that as well. And seeing that development in such a short time, I'm like, oh my goodness, like, I totally resonate with what you're going on there.
And I appreciate you. I wish I would have had the capacity to recognize what you just stated at your age when I started. Because even when I was starting and I was feeling some of that as the entry point, I would argue that my first 4 or 5 years probably all of my assistant coaching tenure, when I worked for a Hall of Fame coach who won a national title, like, I was heavily invested in the early group of players because I had played with them. But then as we kind of progressed and they graduated out, I just was really wrapped up in the record and how can I help us win? How can I recruit the highest quality player? And even into my first 2 years as a head coach, you know, I got the job when I was 29 years old. So, you know, I figured I was a couple championships away from being the Lakers coach, right? Like, and that's not how this stuff worked out, obviously. But I know I was really scoreboard driven. I was just like rooted in scoreboard curriculum. And obviously, and we'll get into this, you know, some events happened that shook me back into, why did you want to do this in the first place? Because it wasn't tied only to wins and losses. I think competition is vital. I think learning through competition is a healthy life skill, but it cannot be the only thing driving us. And I know I even in as learning and refining my skills under a great mentor, it was all towards the scoreboard. And I know I had to be shook out and was lucky that these events happened to be able to reframe myself, refocus myself, and get into the teams of men in the mirror training focus going forward.
I love that. And I want to, you know, segue into, you know, that event that happened that transformed your entire coaching philosophy. But one question that I have before that is, you know, you mentioned how you were working with a Hall of Fame head coach and being under that type of leadership. So I'm curious here as a young coach, you know, what were some of the skills that you picked up, you know, not so much X and O skills, but the life skills and how you approach coaching from that Hall of Fame coach?
Right. And it's a great question because it's such a duality because I played for him too. And I think I learned more, not that we had success, we won championship when I played for him, but we didn't have a real relationship until I coached for him. And in coaching for him, I was exceptionally lucky because the first day as an assistant coach, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, is he pulled me aside day one and said, I know you're excited. Thank you for joining the staff. I want you to be sure you don't just write down or take mental notes of the stuff I do that you like. I want you to write down all the stuff you don't like. I want you to write down all the stuff you're curious about, why I do it. I want you to write down all the stuff you absolutely disagree with and don't want to do. Because I don't want you to try to become me. I don't want you to try to become a copy of me. I want you to take the best parts of me and the worst parts of me and find where you are as a coach. And I was really lucky that he said that. Because otherwise, I probably just would like, well, this guy's won 300 plus games. There's a banner hanging in this gym because of him. I should probably do what he does. And he freed me from that, which I think so many coaches struggle with. Because we all, a lot of times we're like, hey, in reflection of where I'm at in my adult life, well, I played for this particular coach and this is how he coached. So that must be part of the input to my success now, when sometimes those old ways of coaching probably harmed you. And you need to give yourself some resilience points that you are where you are despite that. That's not universally true. All of us have had good coaching too. But I think he was able to give me a lens that a lot of coaches, it takes them a long time to find, that what is new, what is the why behind things? Because sometimes the why means we shouldn't do it anymore and we should drop it and learn something new. And I was really fortunate to get that from him as a first year assistant, and have really tried to carry that forward and make sure my assistants had the same concept. Like, hey, thank you for being here. I want us to work together. I want us to be loyal. But loyalty doesn't mean obedience. And loyalty doesn't mean you have to do everything I say without question. That's not true at all. I want collaboration. So that's probably the number one thing I took from Coach Gordy James, and I'm eternally grateful for it.
Yeah, I love that so much. And, you know, there's a popular saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But, you know, the other saying, all these new generations are coming in, and we have to change. We have to adapt and evolve to, you know, meet people where they're at and this new style of play. But one thing that you said is how that coach freed you from your mind of just copying him. And I actually have this fusion philosophy with Nova Fusion. It's part of the brand here. It's from Bruce Lee, of taking all of these things that work best, the things that don't work best, and not do that, but create your own unique system, not a copycat of someone else. But, you know, you're going to have certain things that just naturally work better for you. And those are the things that you should execute on. And if something works great for someone else, but it doesn't necessarily work good for you, you know, that's okay. Like, you don't have to use that. And that's, you know, the great thing about creating your own philosophy and your own style. And that's what's going to make you unique, and that's what's going to make you great at the end of the day. You know, rather be the best version of yourself rather than, you know, the number two of someone else.
Right. No, I think that's 100% accurate. And it's an easy trap in all sports. But we'll speak basketball here, because, you know, you can watch a championship team. You can watch the winning team, whether it's right now in the Olympics and FIBA or the NBA or D1. And you can see a set, you can see an action, you can see a tactical component that work. But without embracing the idea that that's nuanced and fits those particular people in a setting that your people don't exist in, we can get stuck just grabbing and copying and pasting. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I like what you said. If my philosophy is rooted in, I'm going to seek the why, I'm going to go dive into, that's who I am. And I'm not rooted to one just set system, then I allow myself flexibility, because I think we all have a lot of, we don't want to be seen as, well, he's a flip flopper, or no. My core being is embracing new. My core being is being willing to unlearn. My core being is embraced in is curiosity. And it's really easy to stay true to myself while also learning and also growing.
Yeah. And those are traits that we can all adapt and apply in our lives. So thank you for sharing that. Dr. Doug's offers the best organic topical balms for protecting, healing, and restoring your skin and life. Just twist off a cap, apply like lotion, and get ready to feel outstanding. My favorite products are the magnesium balm for headaches, and recovery balm for coaching basketball or training for a Spartan race. But that's not all. It started with Dr. Doug's original Miracle Balm, a rejuvenating balm fueled with all organic ingredients, including beeswax, extra virgin olive oil, extra virgin coconut oil, shea butter, peppermint and lavender essential oils, and vitamin E. This one-of-a-kind solution is designed to tackle an array of skin concerns such as itchy dry skin, eczema, any rashy irritated areas, and much more. Now, if you're bright and pasty like me, you may want to consider their Miracle Balm plus zinc as a natural sunscreen to keep you from frying up without any harmful SPF chemicals that are linked to cancer. Now, do you hate bugs? Me too, but we got you. Try Dr. Doug's Bug Potion to repel bugs, relieve itchy bites, and kill bacteria so you can enjoy the great outdoors once again. There is truly something for everybody, including that little one in your life who is trying to tell you to get Dr. Doug's baby balm for their bum right now. And here's your chance. Click the link in our show notes now to enhance your life with Dr. Doug's balms and get extra to share with those who you care about. Take back your power and feel outstanding with Dr. Doug's natural balms. Now I want to dive into this, you know, pivotal moment in not only your life, but your coaching career. You know, yeah. I'd love for you to touch on those set of traumatic events that really caused you to reassess and reshape your approach.
Well, I appreciate it. And I think it's probably appropriate. And I've learned from professionals in the work of gender violence prevention to make sure like we're going to bring up some topics, right, going forward that might be triggering for listeners. So please give yourself space and time with what we're going to bring up. Because it shook me to my core, right? And it was probably, I think it was 3 years into my coaching career as a head coach in college. And on the campus I was at, there was a series of events. There was a gender violence sexual assault on campus committed by an athlete. And there was a unearthing of, this was like 2012, 2013. So young people were still on Facebook, unlike now, right? But there was a misogynistic Facebook group unearthed of one of the fraternities. And it had a lot of athletes in the fraternity, but it had ranked the sexual viability of females on camp, of women on campus. It had a ton of misogynistic, sexist nicknames and terms and applied to female administrators on campus. It was just a really toxic space that came to light, and all the posts were shared. And all these things were kind of coalescing at Willamette. And people, because I'd been there for so long, people were calling me constantly saying, hey, what's going on? Like, I'm a parent of one of your players. I'm an alumni of the program. I'm a booster of the program. I'm a person in the community that likes to bring their kids to your games. Tell me how this squares with any version of values or morals that you have, that's what's happening at your school. And all I could say for the first month of this kind of pushback was, well, it's not my guys, which was technically accurate. My players had not committed these things. But I knew that I'd done nothing different in my coaching philosophy, nothing different in my approach than the coaches whose players had made poor choices. So I couldn't point to, well, look at what I'm doing different. And that really didn't sit well with me, you know, hearkening back to who my parents were, hearkening back to the philosophies I had. And the original reason I got into coaching was to impact young people. I wasn't doing that. You know, I was doing the rinse repeat of, did we win? Okay, stay humble. Did we lose? Okay, stay resilient. And now right back to film, weights, practice, yell, scream, pick and roll defense. And I knew I'd sat in states across the country in living rooms of families and promised them a better version of the young men they were sending me. And maybe I was improving their jump shot, but I really wasn't giving them back a younger version. I had no plans. I had no intentional space creation for any of this. I mean, maybe I was talking to the guys one day, but there was no intentionality and sequenced learning that I had done. And that was the moment. That was the change. I can't do this. I don't want to be this person. I don't want to be this coach anymore. So I walked across campus and I went to the Gender Resources and Title IX Center on campus and talked to the director then, Carly Rohner, and said, Carly, I don't want my guys to commit these acts, but I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to make sure we have a system. I can tell them don't. But if don't was all it took, then guys would never turn the ball over. If don't was all it took, then they'd never make poor decisions in passing in the game. We all know that would be ludicrous for me to tell you, hey, Dan, you know what we're going to do this week? We're going to tell the kids to get stops, but then we're not going to practice because we just said it. So we'll be fine. right? Well, that's insane. But we sometimes settle for that in this work. So to Carly's credit, and we're still colleagues to this day, as she works for the Oregon Attorney General Sexual Assault Task Force for the state, she helped me create a system. Like, yeah, this is the professional flows. These are the educational resources. These are the speakers. These are the books. These are all the things you should be versed in to help expose your guys to. And that was the beginning of the Teams of Men framework. And I give a lot of credit to that first group of players, because when I rolled it out, I hadn't recruited them to that. I hadn't told them we were going to do these things, but they accepted it. They jumped in with me. They were willing to learn and unlearn and feel awkward and be vulnerable as we built the system, which over the next decade turned into a 4-year tiered system of about 25 sessions a season for our guys that had very little to do with basketball. And who cares if it does or doesn't, we were going to try to build them as humans going forward.
Yeah. And like I said before, I just have so much respect for, you know, you actually took that and you made it a point to take a stand and actually do something about it. Because a lot of times an event like that would happen on a big campus. And like you did for that first month, it's like, well, it wasn't my guys. Like, I didn't contribute to this. And, you know, that's it. And you just keep on going business as usual. But you were different in the sense that you really took it upon yourself to, you know, do something about it. And now you even wrote a book that covers a lot of this. And it's really the main points of that book is changing the conversations on that gender violence. And I would say it's almost like a life calling for you as well, similar to coaching. So
yes.
What?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What was that fire that like really made it almost personal for you?
That's a great question. You know, I think there are aspects of it rooted in my own life and family experience. You know, I'm a secondary survivor. It's not my story to tell, but a family member is a survivor of gender violence. So that was always in me and sticking with me, right, as I went through it. But also, you know, I really believe in two formulas that are in the book, but also I think have relevance for your show. The first one is, I think there's such a unique formula that players, male athletes specifically, experience while they're playing, whether it's in T-ball all the way through, say, if they're lucky enough to be in a college career, because every day they go to practice or program, whatever the team's program session is, hopefully if you're doing your job right as a coach, liking the people they're going to see, maybe hopefully respecting them, maybe ultimately loving them, right? So that's a unique setting. Like, I'm going somewhere where I'm going to see people I love. Second, I'm going somewhere, I'm going to see people I love, and I'm going to be expecting to meet a leader, a mentor, a coach, somebody I trust to push me. And third, I'm going there with the expectation that growth is going to be demanded of me. I mean, I've had a therapist for almost 20 years, God bless him. And he tells me to go find that in my adult life. Like, go find people you love, people are going to push you, and you go there willing to be pushed and asked to grow. That don't happen very much. Most of the time, my boys and I, we get together and talk about Ducks football, right? It's not a deep conversation, but young men in these teams get it every day. And if we really believe in the second part of this, that sports can be transformational, then we have to activate that formula, not just for third down blitz packages, not just for approach at the plate. Those are part of it, of course. But we can do so much more, because I really believe athletes are given a platform, especially football and basketball players in this country, earned or unearned. And that's probably a whole other podcast you can do. Do we earn that platform? But they're going to be given it. So we, as coaches, we're either sending them to that platform prepared to be change agents for positivity, or we're sending them to that platform completely naked and unprepared and most likely perpetrating harm. And that's our choice as coaches, because at the end of the day, man, I've evolved to – as much as basketball has played a role in my life, and it absolutely has, I think basketball is neutral at best to me. I think all the lessons, all the impact is directly correlated to the people I played or coached basketball with. The basketball, I could blow out my knee tomorrow on the court, and the game would keep going. They'd pull my ass to the side, and the game would keep going. But all the people that cared or were worried or wanted to help me would show up. And I think that's something that coaches – I had to come to grips with, that in order for this game to have the meaning I want it to have, I need to be intentionally framing lessons.
That is so good. And it really is those relationships that you just highlighted. I've always played basketball from a young age, and I was actually diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and I was out for my entire senior year of high school with surgeries, and as my illness rapidly progressed, and the only people I was like closing off to the world. I was self-isolating, I was just in a dark place myself. But the people that were very persistent, the ones that even came to the hospital when I didn't even want my family there, were a couple of those basketball guys. And that really just highlights what you said is, it's a brotherhood, it's a sisterhood, and these are relationships that hopefully can be lifelong. And even if they aren't, the lessons that you learn during that time, during that season in your life, those can be lifelong lessons if the people aren't, we all go different paths as we continue to grow. But, those lessons can stay in here. They can stay in here for the rest of our lives. So I love that basketball is a way to do that, and just sports at large. Like, there's so much life lessons and maturity and growth that we can learn handling failure as well, because that never stops either. So building that resilient mindset is something that, I really just respect about sports and the game of basketball itself.
And I think we're so, I appreciate you sharing those stories, because also coaches, we're in that unique position where we put names to these experiences for young people. Like, just like you said, the opportunity to show care, the opportunity to display what it looks like to take care of your brother when you're in the hospital going through surgeries, to name that that was a resilient moment, and to give kids the tools to identify these things. Because they, like, just like you said, sports are a great, they're a bastion of failure. Like, most of it is failing. But how do we give them the tools to name it, and then do we give them the tools to process through it, is part of our job. Because I don't think it's osmosis for kids, right? Like, sometimes if we don't frame it for them, it's like, I went 0 for 12 today. And then what? Right? Like, we would be the ones, or their teammates would be the ones, to show them the opportunity for a rep and resiliency. And so I agree with you that, and that's part of what I'm trying to drive in the profession, is I think coaches have these skill sets, right? I think they're already experts in sequencing information towards a new outcome or a new behavior change. They just happen to do it for our zone offense. We can do the same sequencing towards a healthier idea of what manhood is. We can do that same sequencing towards consent skills in our intimate relationships. We can do that same planning for healthy relationship skills. We just tend to be intimidated by it, which we would never let our players do, right? If we were playing the number one team in the state, the number one team in the AAU circuit, number one team in the country, we would tell our players what an opportunity it was, what a challenge it was going to be, and how awesome it was to embrace challenge. But when it comes to these scary topics for us as coaches, we often don't practice what we preach. And that's part of what I see, like you mentioned, part of what I see my calling, my vision, is to get coaches to embrace some of their own teaching on things that matter.
And one of, we kind of already touched it just through this conversation, but one of my questions was, as coaches and leaders, it's our responsibility to set the tone and lead by example, as you just mentioned. I'm curious, like, how does that look with your young men as you coach, like as a practice, and just in general, how are you setting that example?
No, great question. 'Cause I think you're so right. Modeling is one of the best things we can do,
Yeah, we
right?
mirror
And I
each other
think,
all the time.
yes. And what, right? Mirror training.
Mirror training.
But right, see, we're dialed in here. We got all the cliches, everything's ready. But I think one of the easiest ways, and this is what, I've been really harping on this past month, because I think it was kind of an aha moment for me to get coaches comfortable. Because if there's like the Goldilocks zone in anything, right? We need to challenge, but it can't be impossible. And we need success, but it can't be too easy. So there's this Goldilocks zone of learning. And I think for a lot of coaches that are wanting to they feel the call to do exactly what you and I believe in with coaching, is how can I be more? How can we have convos or discussions or settings about real topics? We've given them seven mantra t-shirts. We call it our wear and share bundle. And coach, all you got to do is wear this shirt. Let's say it says mirror training in progress. You wear it in dynamic stretching lines. And post practice, you say, hey, partner up, what's my shirt mean? What'd you guys think it, what'd you think it said? Because I guarantee you, 10 of the kids were looking at your shirt going, what the hell is that? And now you have conversations and settings to where guys feel courage to ask questions or share their opinions, which are two life skills anyway. And we just have a set of seven that we ask coaches, hey, start here, coach. Do year one. These are seven sessions that'll take at most 10 minutes post practice, 10 minutes in the middle of stretching, to have these convos and give kids reps in talking about things that aren't just your coverage in the secondary, that aren't just your rotations off a stagger. And I think that's been an easy entry point in a way for coaches to model, because you can also talk about the power of wearing that shirt in the hallway at a high school, right? You can talk about the power of wearing that shirt on campus if it says vulnerability is a connection point and you're a 6'5", 240-pound D-end, and you're wearing a vulnerability shirt. Somebody's going to stop you. Somebody's going to ask you. And those are all gateways to connection. So that's been something we've really been trying to show coaches. Hey, this is, if you believe in this stuff, you're worried about the start, do this for year one, right? And then as you go forward, what I've tried to tell coaches is so much that I don't have a master's degree or a doctorate in gender violence prevention. I don't have a doctorate in reimagining manhood. I'm a learner, a lifelong learner. I'm willing to ask questions. But what I am probably the best at, and coaches can copy easily, is I'm willing to share failure. I'm willing to sit down with my guys and say, let me tell you guys why my daughter checked me yesterday. She's going to be a sophomore in high school. And what I learned from her, because I was dumb as a dad. Let me tell you how I messed up as a husband 3 years ago and what my wife and I did to move forward. Let me tell you as a son where I think I could have been better. And sharing those vulnerabilities yourself models to the players how to do the same. And so those are some of, hopefully in answering your question, that's kind of what it looks like in practice. Obviously, there's curriculum. Obviously, there's learning bullet points and there's some presentation. But a lot of that is not, I'm the expert. Look at me. I'm a perfect man. Oh, God, no. I'm right here with you guys trying to unlearn the man box, trying to escape from the man box. And I think there's power in that shoulder-to-shoulder model.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Showing them that you're in the trenches. You're still learning. You're still growing. You don't have all the answers, right, but you're trying every day to get better. And,
right,
you know, I think vulnerability truly is one of those deeper ways that we can connect with our players and coaches, yeah, and just the people around us. And in addition to that vulnerability, like, what are some other ways that you just catalyze these connections amongst your players?
Yeah. You know, and I think that's intentionally creating different and novel ways to ask them to share and interact. So, yes, partners is part of it, but they've experienced partners before. Normally, they pick their best friend. So that's an easy sharing one. But if you truly have a brotherhood, right, that we all claim, if you truly have a culture of togetherness, which we all would want, then you got to intermix those groups. Sometimes we do position groups. Sometimes we do, like in the high school level, seniors, you got to be the freshman. You know, juniors, you got to be with a sophomore. I think sometimes you don't do the one-on-one. You do groups of five, right? And you make sure and ensure that everybody has a role. There's a lot of these that are teaching, like Edutopia is a great website, teacher to teacher. It's another great follow for folks out there, because while you might not be an in-the-classroom teacher, as a coach, you are an educator. You say that tagline all the time, right, as coaches. So why not use some of the best practices from teaching and group work and you know, is it a circle setting? Is it a square setting? And those seem like trivial ideas, but if a kid walks into your film room and it's set up in L-shaped groups, and usually it's the rows, they're going to go, what the hell is this? But now they're locked in because it's novel and it's new. You've got their attention, which is part of the struggle anyway in the 21st century, is getting people's attention. So those are some of the ways we do it. We do also, we try to allow them anonymity when they're younger, whether it's a freshman going into high school, which I have now, or freshman going into college. We try to give them a lot of Google surveys, poll everywheres that are anonymous. We require them to do it, but we give them the safety of, hey, these words we're going to read, but it's not going to be directly attributed to you. We want to help you grow to stand in your power, to embrace your words and stand behind it. But right now we understand it's an intimidating environment, but we do want to get your truth. So don't put your name on it, but answer this, even if you don't know, answer that truthfully. Because I think you need to operate from the realities of your room. And some groups will be more versed in some of this stuff than others, but you need to know that as a coach, because the second they sniff out this is a repeat, or they think I already know this, you lose that session. So that's part of some of our methodology.
And it's like leading with that curiosity as one of your core values and creating the environment You're not necessarily making statements and telling them this is how things should be, but you're opening those conversations and starting this dialogue that they're going to continue on even outside of practice. Maybe they start talking to one of their parents and get their feedback on it, and then that becomes a family discussion. Or just like, you never know where these conversations can go, but you know, you're sparking the learning and you're getting them to work together and maybe talk to someone by, you know, doing the pairing differently, not just with your best friend, but they're having different conversations with people that wouldn't normally be talking about these types of topics with. And you know, these are the topics that we really want to bring the awareness of to create that character change that allows us to evolve and become, you know, those great men, husbands, and fathers, like you were saying.
Exactly. And I think there's a quote I got, and I believe it was when I was on another great fall for listeners, a great follow, is a call to men. And they're one of the national leaders, Tony Porter and Ted Bunch, co-founded it. Tony Porter coined the term man box. But they talked about in one of their trainings that I was on, they said, once you know, you can never go back to living as if you don't know. And if you create the ability of your players to identify misogyny, or identify oppression, identify the man box, they're going to see it in their lives. And then your job is to allow them and give them toolkits to call it out. Allow them to give in their circles, just like you said, hey, you might be in a group of guys that don't play for us. Those are teammates. I mean, those are still your friends. Those are your brothers in life. What are you saying when they say something problematic? What do you need help from us? What are phrases we can use to diffuse problematic language and not lose your friend at the same time, but call them up to better? And those are all things young men want to be part of the solution. Young men want to be good people. They don't always know. Like, we'd never send them out against the zone. Like, if we showed up to a game, or you showed up to your AAU tournament, and you didn't have a plan on how to attack zone, you'd never blame the players. You'd be like, damn, I didn't get that in practice. I wasn't prepared for that. You'd be upset with yourself. I think we got to apply some of that same thought process to when they walk into a social event on a Saturday night, when they're out on a date with an intimate partner. Did we give them toolkits? And if we didn't, how can we hold them to that? If we didn't do it, when we're one of the people in their lives they trust to do it.
So good. And I always say awareness is the first step to changing anything. And I'll take this as a wellness and health reference, because that's a big part of my life.
Yes.
Once you figure out, you know, those foods and what's actually in all of these processed foods, or, you know, you just find all of this bad stuff, you know what's in there, and you're not going to go back to what you were eating before. So once you know how your actions, how your words affect other people, how your words affect women, you're not going to be acting that way once you realize the impact that it does have on them. And one of the things that we can either touch on this or leave it as like a little hanger for the people to get your book here is your morning routine exercise that you go with your team. I thought that was like one of my biggest takeaways when I was reading your book, because I've never thought about it that way. One of the questions was, what does a woman have to worry about when she wakes up in the morning to prepare against gender violence? You know, like, I've never thought about that question ever, but it's so much different from what a guy has to think about it.
And
when you do that exercise, you really put the thoughts in play and you put the list together. It's like, oh, wow. Like, there's a lot.
Yeah. The imbalance is striking, right? The imbalance is striking.
Yeah.
And I, you know, you were talking about earlier, and I know, and I love the work you do with the wellness, and so much of this work, I think, can contribute to the overall wellness of the players in your team room. Because if they're carrying angst, worry, if they're carrying the idea that they can't be authentically themselves, if they're carrying the idea that they should be silent in these spaces because they don't know how to stand up to the language or the behaviors in the team room, you don't really have a culture of wellness. Right? Because my guys cannot be authentically them. And we know they all play better when they're free of these thoughts, when they're free of the shackles of what's wearing them down. But it's we can't just say, well, hey, leave your nonsense at the door. Hey, leave all your we don't, as coaches, we don't put that backpack down. We bring it in and pour all our trauma into our players. So I think going through this allowed me to see myself, right, in a new space, and see, like, man, I bet he would be faster, run faster, jump higher without the emotional weight, without the stress weight, without the mental health issues that he could be carrying, because I believe in him and I know about them. And now I can find and activate people on campus and the community to help him process through those things rather than just demand, hey, drop it. Don't be soft. You know, all the man box stuff. I think there is a huge wellness component to it. And the like you mentioned, what you do in the morning exercise, that's another one of those. Once you know this, you can never go back to living and viewing the experience of women, the experience of the LGBTQ community, the experience of minorities on the same in the same light and not want to be part of helping alleviate that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I wanted to bring you on and share what you're doing and, you know, just bring more awareness to these types of conversations. I would love to just promote your book here. We got the Mirror Training book one last time. And I'm curious,
yes, sir.
As like a final question to start wrapping things up here, what does reimagining manhood, you know, in a definition or a statement, like what does that mean to you?
Thank you for that. That's a great question, because I think the vital component in what I'll give you a little bit of background. When I first did the work, I just immersed myself in scary statistics, because for me as a coach, I love analytics. I love points per possession. I love all these things, and the statistics move me. So my first couple sessions with my players, I threw up scary stats of gender violence, sexual assault, rape, stalking, harassment, oppression. And I said, see, look, these are bad, but it's almost like putting up poor free throw shooting percentage. Like, look, it's bad. And they're like, yeah, I know, but I don't know how to fix it. Right. And it's also so easy to remove yourself from the stats. Like, coach, I'm never going to commit those things. I don't need to take action because I won't do it. So what I had to learn, and I had to work with Carly and a bunch of other experts, oftentimes women in LGBT community that do this work without notoriety. And part of what I think my job is to shine light on their great efforts, is recognizing that so many of these actions that men take, these behaviors that are chosen that harm others, particularly women, is rooted in the man box. And when the man box, as Tony Porter talks about it, convinces us that to be a true man and to get your man card every day, you have to have no emotions, strip yourself of emotions, divorce yourself from anything associated with femininity, conquer everything, whether it's your grades, your school, your class, your career, women in the bedroom, sexual conquest, make as much money as possible, and be completely isolated in the alpha. All that is nonsense. So reimagining manhood to me is seeing the man box and how it's tried to confine you and saying, I'm done with these walls and I'm going to embrace emotional fluency. I'm going to embrace real intimate relationships that are rooted in love. I'm going to embrace asking for help. I'm going to embrace that my value is not in dollar signs or points per game. And seeing where that new identity, that new authentic you takes you, because you might end up in a whole nother place than you and I, but we both escaped the man box. So now it's awesome. Right. And so that's really a lot of our work, is getting coaches to train their players in sessions when they're in their programs to let's ID the walls in the man box and explode from that. Because it's the same concept of shackling yourself to being one type of player instead of growing your skill sets in all these areas. And so that's how I try to, in the book especially, is give coaches activations per chapter on how they can see, identify, and help their guys blow up their man box. And you know what's awesome? In doing this work myself, I got to see all the ways it shaped me in harmful ways and all the ways I could escape it as well, right alongside my guys.
Yeah, you're in it together, and that's what a true leader is. It's like that liberation as well. Like, you're finally free. Oh, you break through these walls, and you know, you can be, do, and have anything that you want. You just got to put that work in, and you know,
right,
getting rid of those strips of like what things should be, you know, just opens up the doors for so many opportunities that you wouldn't even see if you had all these walls blocking your vision. So,
well, and think about that. The weight of what we try to tell our guys. If you were out here trying to play defense, full court pressure, if you were trying to beat somebody off the bounce, weighed down by an extra 50, if I just put a 50-pound weight on your back, you would clearly be slower. There might be days you wear it really well, but eventually that's going to be too damn heavy. You're not going to be who you can be. You're not going to jump the way you can. You're not going to shoot the way you can. The weight is going to be a problem. And the weight of trying to perform to this nonsense manhood and earn my man card every day with my friends and my teammates, it just gets to be too much. And that's why we see kids burned out. That's why we see young men explode in these sessions. Like, how many times have we heard stories of, oh, I just couldn't believe he exploded like that? That's just not him. Well, yeah, because he finally could not carry this BS of the man box anymore. And unfortunately, when we lose our capacity to carry it, we usually drop it or spill out over the people in closest proximity to us. And oftentimes that's people we love. And we end up doing and committing harms that we wouldn't choose for ourselves. But the performative nature of the man box has forced us into it. So there's such a liberation's a great word. I love you said that, because there's such a freedom that comes with, I don't have to try to earn this stupid scoreboard point anymore. I get to just be me. And who me on who I am could be this caring, empathetic, kind person, and I get to be him all day. Man, this is awesome. And that's part of the power of the work.
Yeah, and the cost of not doing that work is hurting the people that you love the most. And when you just put that
Absolutely.
perspective, it's like, oh, well, I am going to do this work now. Like, I don't have a choice. Like, I don't want to hurt the people that I love and that love me. So, for anyone
Right.
out there that's like, hearing these ideas for the first time, like, just think about that opportunity cost and the things that could happen if you don't take action. There's
And what about,
always
think
a
about the
risk.
power for coaches that put this into the practice plan. Just do it once a week, coach. Think about how many weeks your practice is. I mean, what do you have? 15 weeks in a high school season? 15 times you helped your young men chip away at this? I think you earned yourself a good night's sleep because you're doing your job.
Yeah, and that's all we can do. Like, do the best that we can be and, share these lessons forward. But man, we are just ripping through this. Like, I love the synergy that we already have. I know that we're gonna be growing together for a long time
That's
to
right.
come. I got one last question before we wrap things up. What has been the greatest lesson or piece of advice received that has made the biggest impact on you throughout all of your
Ooh.
experiences? A tough
Wow.
one.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you didn't give me an easy one to end it. I don't know if I can point to one specific, but there's a through line. And I think I'm very lucky to have had, whether it was through, I don't know if it was through one person's like lecture to me in general. It might be through a life in athletics, excuse me, a life through athletics. I think the antenna that I was given through failure, through striving for something and coming up short, to always be on the lookout for the why and the new path. Like this is like a GPS. Like, yes, that's the current highway that everyone's on. Is that the best? Maybe sometimes it is. Maybe it's proven. Maybe sometimes it's not, and there's an alternative route. That's like a life skill that I'm very fortunate to have, and how I view damn near everything. That doesn't mean sometimes that the best laid plans I should follow. Absolutely. But it also gives me the freedom to be innovative and try to find alternatives that could be better, whether that's through parenting, whether that's through my career as a businessman, whether it's through how my team plays on a Friday night at the high school, all those things. I enjoy that a ton, and I would wish it for everyone of why are we going this way? And sometimes you'll land on because it's the right way. And sometimes you'll land on, yeah, this is dumb. There's a better path. And that leads you to connecting and finding other people that are, kind of these alternative thinkers, which I really enjoy.
Yeah, student of life. That's the way to do it. It's a great mindset to
Right.
have. And leading with curiosity, I want to keep bringing that up and encourage more people to, look through that their lens of life that way as well. But yeah, now that we're wrapping up here, before you hop off, let us know how we can support you. Again, we have the mirror training book here that I will put in the show notes below.
Thank you, sir.
But let us know, like, if you have anything else
Yeah.
going on or something that you're looking forward
Oh,
to.
I think I appreciate you with the book. The book's obviously the easiest way to directly contribute to us being able to continue to do our work. But I think if you've got parents listening, if you've got athletes, if you've got coaches listening, if you go to teamsofmenllc.com, you can see the myriad of ways in there that we'd like to engage. Like we mentioned before, we work with middle school through college coaches, athletic directors programs, whether that's me speaking in person or whether that's you downloading some of our curriculum because you as a coach want to do it. I think the power of what we do is when coaches take this on, and I'm nowhere to be found because your coaches, the players trust you. I can set the stage for why. I can be a funny speaker for an hour, but they have you all season. And we try to do our best to engage coaches with best practices. Our membership model, it's only 10 bucks a month. We're growing our membership of coaches and athletic department administrators who get insight from us and ideas from us every month delivered to their inbox, and then they take it in a lot of great places. So those are probably the best avenues to deal with us.
That's awesome. And where can we find you on social media? Where are you at the most?
You know, I'm still on it. And I tell myself every week I'm going to escape, but I think I might just be an addict. I'm still on X and Twitter often, @teams_men and @KipIone, IOANE. We are growing. We've got about over 3,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel, which might be great, especially in the 21st century, because we'll do shorts and long form. So that's just @teamsofmen after YouTube /@teamsofmen. And I think that's a great method, a great space for coaches, because you can digest that either audibly, like the podcast here, or in the video form, because we try to give coaches framings on how to do lesson plans with this topic, whether it's current events or a statistic we're trying to be a part of the change to removing. We try to give coaches in our 12-minute long form or our 1-minute short video, hey, here's the questions you should ask your guys. Here's the setting. Here's the reason. Here's the follow-up. And try to give them that cheat sheet, so to speak, or that quick out-of-bounds play, right, to score with their guys and stuff that matters.
Awesome. Well, yeah, listeners, go check them out on YouTube. Check out the website and definitely get the book, Mirror Training. Coach Ione, thank you so much for impacting us today. You are empowering future generations with life lessons and skills that will continue to grow and better their lives on and off the courts. You lead by example with your willingness to give back and to do the right thing, and humanity is a better and brighter place because of you. I'm grateful that we crossed paths, and I'm excited to continue growing with you. Thank you so much
for joining us
today.
Thank you. Awesome pod.
Are you ready to take charge of your health and transform your life? Well, get ready, because we have the solution for you. Introducing the NovaFusion 21-Day Wellness and Resilience Challenge, the ultimate program designed to stack massive momentum, achieve peak performance, and spark your transformation. In just 21 days, you can experience a total wellness revolution. Our challenge is jam-packed with daily inspiration, education, downloadable resources, and exciting challenges to keep you fired up and on track. But that's not all. When you join the challenge, you'll also become a member of our exclusive NovaFusion family. Together, we'll support and uplift one another as we continue to grow and thrive. Unlock the secrets of the world's best wellness and resilience practices to stay mentally and physically fit for a lifetime. From renewing healing practices to transformative high-performance techniques, we've got you covered. And here's something that sets us apart. I believe in these practices so much that I'm offering a money-back guarantee. That's right, if you don't see results, you can get your money back, so you have absolutely nothing to lose, but everything to gain. So what are you waiting for? Take advantage of this limited-time opportunity right now. Go to NovaFusion.co/challenge to sign up and embark on the journey of a lifetime. Let's spark your transformation together. I can't wait to see you on the other side.